Welcome to another episode of Journey to the Rise. I'm your host, Lucretia. In this episode, I talk with Sherry Grossman. With a love for music from a young age, she found a passion for teaching. Taking the two things she loved, she curated herself an incredible career as a music teacher. I recorded this interview in early 2024, and since that conversation, Ms. Grossman has found herself with a new opportunity at a different school. It takes a special person to become a teacher. With a music teacher, that is an experience that gives a student an environment to have a safe place to be their authentic self. It is truly a gift our teachers give to students, and it is often overlooked. Let's not delay with this conversation and dive on in. Please welcome Mrs. Sherry Grossman. So today we're going to talk to someone who followed her passion and ended up becoming an award-winning music instructor. She is someone who knows how to orchestrate her students to not only have success, but inspire them to just find their own greatness. And I'm so excited for her to be here today. Sherry, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. That's very sweet of you to say.
It's so true. It's really been fun to see your students, like watching them on social media, just blossom and grow into incredible individuals. And I highly, highly, highly commend you for being part of that influence.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So where did you grow up? Where was home for you?
I grew up in Southern California and part of the central coast of California. I was born in Orange County, and then my parents divorced and I moved when I was 10. And I was very involved with music in elementary school and started playing the violin in second, third, and fourth grade. And when we moved, my new fifth grade up in the Central Coast didn't have orchestra anymore. So I still wanted to play music, and it was band. So the band director, who ended up being probably the most important person in my life for a really long time, he said, "Well, you look like a clarinet player." And I was like, "Okay." So I started playing clarinet then in fifth grade and played through college. And never really, you know, I wanted to kind of go back to violin, but never really had a chance to take lessons or whatever until I went into college and we had to do string methods and things like that. And it came back, you know, fairly quickly, just the very basics, not that I'm an accomplished violinist, because I am not. But I've always loved to sing. But growing up, my grandfather was musical. My uncle, my mom's younger brother, was very musical. And my dad was very musical. So I had some musical inspirations all around me. But mainly, I think it was my band director that kind of pushed me. And I kind of fell in love with music somewhere in that junior high, middle school, eighth grade-ish time. So, yeah.
Wow. So were your family like encouraging you to play, or just because you were around it made you want to pick up an instrument?
My family encouraged me. I just loved music. So that was an easy choice. My grandfather was the one who bought my first clarinet for me, and he was very supportive in everything. And I think the combination of that, my grandma tried to teach me piano. I actually tried to take piano lessons for a while, and I was not very good. Tried to pick up guitar, also not very good. But my whole family was supportive. I was also into sports, in particular in high school. But even before that, I did soccer and dance and softball, and I tried everything. I wanted to try everything growing up. So I think I finally settled into music as my career, probably in high school is when I really decided. But I did varsity sports in high school. I was a swimmer and I played water polo. So those were, wow. So it was kind of weird. I was kind of caught in between, you know, I was in kind of the academic classes and I was in sports and I was a musician and I had a lot of theater friends. And so I kind of was all over the place in high school. I've always kind of been that way, where I connect with different people in different ways. And so anyway, that's kind of my inspiration is to, you know, I loved music in high school and I had a really great choir director and I took piano from him as well as choir and was in band all 4 years. So just, you know, decided that's what I wanted to do with the rest of my life.
Oh my gosh. So how did it work when you're in band and you're in sports? Like how do you manage that between games, competitions, performing?
Well, we weren't a really high competition type group where I grew up. We did halftime at the football games, but it was kind of what I call park and bark, where you stop and you play, and then you move, and then you stop and you play. We played in the stands. We did parades. We were a parade band. And so it was, you know, Saturdays. It very rarely conflicted with swimming or water polo, which was during the day. We didn't do any after school band stuff. So didn't really have much conflict in that, which was great. Nowadays, it's almost impossible to do anything extracurricular, more than one thing at a time, at least. So I was very grateful that I could do both things.
Yeah. Yeah. When I hear like my friends talk about their kids, I'm like, I don't know, when do you sit down?
Right. Well, and I've always been that type of person where I don't. So I just don't sit down. My mom tells me I've been overscheduling myself since I was like 5 years old. And and it's true. I like to stay busy. And, you know, and I'm one of those people that if I'm going to relax, I need to be somewhere where I can completely be away and sit on a beach and not worry about it. But if I'm home, or like COVID drove me crazy because I wanted to do every project in the house, you know, and play all of the instruments and learn all of the things and do, you know, so that's just kind of my personality, is to just constantly be in motion.
Yeah. Yeah. So the violin was the first instrument you played. What was the draw? That's a tough instrument to start out on.
Well, it was the way that our school system worked at the time. You could start in second grade on a string instrument. And so really, that's the easiest one to start. I mean, there were not second graders that started on cello or viol. Everybody pretty much played violin. And we just played very basic, very easy little things. It was just a very basic introduction. But I enjoyed it. You know, I had fun. And I really liked my music teacher at the time, who, incidentally, when I went into teaching, was still teaching in the same district. And I ended up teaching in her district and seeing her multiple times before she retired, which was really, really cool.
Wow.
So to go back and be like, wait, I have pictures of you from when I was like seven, you know, and we did some great choir things. I remember singing We Are the World when it came out. And like, she did this great little arrangement for all of us elementary kids, and you know, little things like that, that you remember when you're 7, 8, 9 years old, that really make an impact you don't even realize. And I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to go into music education, is if those people impacted me at such a young age, what could I do for others? Even if it's just small little things, you know, you don't realize sometimes the things that you say or do for another person, whether it be as a teacher or as just a human being, can make a huge difference in their life. So that core memory of singing, you know, We Are the World, or playing violin at this huge concert with everybody in the second, you know, or in the district, I remember those things. And I remember it making a huge impact on me when I was little. So yeah, that was part of my inspiration, I think, going into teaching.
Wow, that's incredible. So where did you end up going to college?
So my dad still lived in the Orange County area where my mom lived, you know, about 4 hours north. And I wanted to live with my dad. He had gotten remarried. He had two little kids, and I just kind of wanted to be with them. So, he lived real near University of California, Irvine, and I really liked the campus, and they had a pretty good music program. And so I toured, and I saw the, wind ensemble perform. Practice, actually just rehearsal. I came to a rehearsal and fell in love with the director. He was so funny and personable, and I really liked how he ran rehearsal. I liked how the music that he was playing, and you know, all those things. So that was a pretty no-brainer for me, where I could live at my dad's house, and it was a 15-minute drive to college. So
nice.
That was great. I ended up graduating there with a performance degree. Even though it's a little different, I think, than a lot of other people with performance degrees today or from other schools. But I got a chance to be in the choir as well and sing some major pieces like Bach B minor Mass and Carmina Burana. We did a madrigal dinner where we sang Renaissance music, and I got to do graduate choral conducting classes with Joseph Husty, the conductor there, choral conductor. So I got a lot of really great experiences there, but it's not necessarily thought of as a great music school necessarily. But I was able to, with the credits I had in high school, and because I don't like to sit down. I took a lot of credits each quarter, and I was able to graduate in 3 years from there. I also knew they didn't have a music ed degree. Well, they didn't have a music ed degree, and I really wanted to be a music teacher. So I knew I had to get my performance degree, and then I could go get my certification to be a teacher. So in order to do that, I went to Cal State Fullerton, which was about 30 minutes up the road. And then I spent a year kind of, I don't want to call it a gap year, but it kind of was to fulfill their requirements for an ed major, things that I didn't take, classes that weren't offered at UC Irvine. And then, I did my student teaching for a full year as well. So it still took me 5 years to get into teaching, which is pretty normal. But you know, it was a little bit of a different, little unconventional way. And I got a chance to be part of two different great schools. So people always ask me, like, where'd you graduate from? It's like, well, my bachelor's is from UC Irvine, my credentials from Cal State Fullerton, and then I went back and got my master's through Southern Oregon University at American Band College.
Wow.
I finished that in 2005. So it's kind of like I have a bachelor's in performance and a master's in conducting, but I'm a teacher.
And it all works.
Yeah, make it work.
So when you're going through these programs in college and all the studying you did throughout from very young age, how many instruments can you play?
Well, you know, in college they teach you to play as many as possible. You do a woodwinds methods class, you do a brass methods class, a percussion methods class, and then a strings methods class. So in all of those, you're getting an exposure to playing to all of them. Now, as far as being able to play at a high level, you know, clarinet's my main instrument. I can play violin with my orchestra students to probably an eighth grade level, whatever that might mean, means different things in different places. So an eighth grader in Texas is going to be a different than an eighth grader in, you know, Tennessee. But at an average, you know, okay. And then I can, you know, I can make sounds on flute. I can kind of, I would say trumpet is probably my secondary woodwind instrument. Whereas if I had to just grab an instrument and go play with the band and I didn't have my clarinet, I'd grab a trumpet. So I can play, quote unquote, whatever that means, most of the band instruments. And I can demonstrate a lot of things, but as far as like sit down and play in a band, clarinet's my main thing.
Yeah.
And then singing. My other.
That's amazing. And so you graduate college. Where did life take you?
Well, it's great. So I met my husband my last year of college, which was my third year, and at work, actually. He's 10 years older than me, so he was my manager. It was crazy. But we ended up getting married, and my first year of student my year of student teaching was our first year of marriage. So that was pretty crazy. But during that student teaching year, the district that I was student teaching in, all of my master teachers really liked me. So it was pretty easy in some ways to kind of get in with that district when a job opened up. So my first job was at Shore Cliffs Middle School in San Clemente, California. It's South Orange County, so an above Oceanside and, you know, below LA. But it was beautiful, block from the beach. I taught 6th, 7th, and 8th grade band and orchestra. And it was great. It was a wonderful job. I'd still be there today if we hadn't moved, which is a whole nother story. But I was really lucky to get into that and had, you know, so much of what you get is people that you know and word of mouth and recommendations and that kind of stuff. And I had some really great influential master teachers that thought highly of me. And so the principal took a chance on it and it worked out really, really well. So I loved it. It's a great first job.
No kidding. It sounds incredible. Pardon the interruption. We're going to take a quick break from our conversation and be back in a minute. Are you looking to capture life's most precious moments in stunning detail? Whether it's a milestone event, a family portrait, or a special celebration, Girl Boss Photography is here to help you tell your unique story through the lens of a camera. At Girl Boss Photography, we specialize in portrait photography, which includes high school seniors, engagement sessions, families, mom and me sessions, headshots, and personal branding. I am there to capture those fleeting moments. My goal is simple, to provide you with timeless images that you'll cherish for years to come. With a passion for creativity and a keen eye for detail, we bring years of professional experience to make you feel comfortable and confident in front of the camera. And because we love our community, we're offering a special deal just for podcast listeners. Book a session with us today and get 50% off your session fee when you mention this podcast. Be seen in photos, whether it's for an engagement or couple session, family photos, high school seniors getting in their photos, or just a fun shoot with friends. We'd love to capture your moments. Head to www.girlbossphotography.com. You can send a DM on Facebook at girlbossphotography615 or head over to Instagram at girl.boss.photography to get more info and to book your personalized session. Welcome back. Ms. Grossman leads by example by putting in the effort to show her students what is possible beyond the classroom. From being in nationally syndicated parades to going after awards that benefits herself and her career, she is such a go-getter and an inspiration. So let's get back to our conversation with Sherry Grossman. And then how did the opportunity to be the assistant band director and assistant choir director at Mount Juliet High School come to you? Because you're in California and that's in Tennessee.
Right. So we started having kids in 2000. My second son was born in 2003. And by 2005, I felt like I really wanted to try to stay home. My older one was having some speech issues and sensory issues and things that I felt like as a mom, I wanted to be able to help him more. And so my husband's job was able to move us. We kind of told them, hey, you know, if there's another district manager position where it's a little easier, cheaper to live, more affordable, then we would like to possibly go. So we actually thought we were moving to the Atlanta area first and went out and looked at houses out there. And then while we were out there, they called him and said, nope, it's going to be Tennessee. So we came out for a long weekend and looked at houses and developments and things like that. And he had offices in different places. And so anywhere in Middle Tennessee would have worked. So we looked at Hendersonville and all that too, and decided on this subdivision and this house. And we were able to sell our house for a great price in 2005 and moved out here for, you know, basically I was able to stay home for about 4.5 years, had our daughter in 2007. And at some point when we moved out here, I was taking the kids to the park, which is really close to Mount Juliet High School. And I kept hearing the metronome click, 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 and the band playing the drums and everything. And I was like, okay, let's go watch them. So we just sat in the parking lot. The boys and I would sit in the parking lot and watch the band rehearse. I was like, you know, I need to meet this band director. This band looks really awesome. They're so disciplined and they sound great. And this is, you know, this looks like something maybe I could be part of, or maybe just teach private lessons. Cause I was going to stay home with the boys, but I still wanted like the draw of teaching music is always there for me, you know? And of course, again, I don't sit down. So I wanted something for me as well, you know?
Yeah.
So eventually I met Tony Cox. I started working with Mount Juliet's band in 2006, just on band staff, working in sectionals, doing private lessons. Fall of 2006, I was on their marching band staff and started going to as many marching band rehearsals as I could. And again, doing woodwind sectionals, and I was their woodwind person for quite a while. And then I had Ellie in 2007, and then the new building opened a little bit after that for Mount Juliet High School. And they had an assistant band director who eventually became the theater teacher. So when the assistant band director position opened up, Tony Cox called me and said, are you ready? Let's go. You know, cause nice. he really wanted me to be part of it. And, so yeah, it was good timing. My daughter was almost 4, and they had a preschool on campus. So her last year of preschool, she was able to just come to school with me, basically. And so my job consisted of teaching band and choir during the day and doing marching band stuff after school. And then fall of 2011. And then in January of 2012, so that same school year, I started the orchestra program at Mount Juliet High School. And we went from zero to 30 kids in the first group. And it was great. Like, it was so much fun. I had the bug after that of, I got to go back to teaching orchestra.
Yeah.
The principal at the time knew I had an orchestral background teaching orchestra back in California. And so he was like, I really want to start a strings program. Can we start one? So I ended up getting a private donor that bought instruments for the program. And it's just, it was amazing. So in that short period of time, I, from 2012 to 2020, I grew the program from the first 30 to about 85 students.
Oh my gosh.
We don't have a feeder. Yeah. No feeder program, nothing at the middle school level. But I would start students when they came to me, and we ended up having, three or four sections each year. So at some point I became orchestra and choir, and then did band after school only. And we actually had to hire another assistant band director to do the band and general music, piano, that kind of stuff. So it was really cool. There were four of us working really well together. And I call it the golden years from like about 2016 to 2020 were pretty awesome years.
Wow. Sure. That's amazing. And nobody else had a program like that in your area. So was it really like the principal and you just coming together and saying, yes, this is what we need to develop here?
Yeah, actually it was, I was surprised when I sat in on that interview that first time and he said, well, I want to start a strings program. And I said, okay, well, how much money will you give me to start it? And he said, $0. And I was like, okay. So I worked really hard and did as much as I could to try to raise money and try to get the students, because school had already was already starting. Students had registered the previous school year for their classes. So I worked that first semester to try to get those 30 students, and it ended up being great. But yeah, very unique for our district. There are lots of schools in Middle Tennessee that have orchestra programs, but it's not as prevalent as choir and band. You know, instrumental orchestra is just kind of almost an afterthought. And it was crazy to me because when I was moving from California to quote unquote Music City, everyone was like, oh, I bet all their orchestras are great. And I started doing research and I'm like, there's not very many orchestras. There's a lot about band in Middle Tennessee, but what about the orchestra?
Right.
So, you know, it was one of those things. And I knew that, you know, starting kids in high school was totally different than when you start kids in elementary school. And it became something I was very passionate about, where these kids, elementary kids are wonderful, but they're very much high strung squirrels, low attention span, you know, small, you know, smaller. So you got to find the right instrument size for them. They don't quite know their bodies yet. They trip over their own feet still. You know, high schoolers are very much more settled. They're more coordinated. And so teaching high school, the rapid growth, I mean, in just 4 months of teaching, they were playing stuff that my middle schoolers had been playing back in California after they'd been playing for 3 years. So it was a very quick, plus we were on block schedule, so I had them for 80 minutes a day. And so it was great to be able to have that time to, you know, refine and really work on everything. So I think the combination of all those things helped make that program successful while it was there in the height of the wonderfulness of the program.
Right. And a string instrument is really challenging to start. Your hands are in different places. The bowing is challenging. So it can get really frustrating. So I think it says a lot about you as an instructor and you as a person to help these kids get past those challenges, find the passion in that music and stick with it and excel. Because it's very challenging, especially the first 3 months are very, very, I think, for a string player, really, because you get that.
It can be. But as a teacher, I think in some ways it's easier to do beginning strings than it is beginning band, because it's all, you know, homogenous. Everybody's kind of doing something similar. Obviously, cello and bass are a little bit different in the way you hold things and all that. But I can see everything. Whereas a wind player, I can't see inside their mouth. And so I don't know how their air is affecting. I don't know where they're actually articulating in their mouth. Like it's different. So teaching beginning band and teaching beginning strings, if you had, you know, had me to choose, I'd pick strings any day, because I can actually physically go to the kid and change their hand and change their posture and all that. Whereas I can't do that with a wind player. I can't physically get inside their mouth and make them do, you know, things right. like that. So,
yeah.
So I think that's part of it too. And the repetition, over and over, you know, doing those kinds of things and helping them to understand you only get better by doing right. and that continuous, you know, time. So I totally agree, but I think that was one of the pluses about doing high school was they could focus for that longer period of time and they wanted to make a good sound. Whereas you put a violin in a 10-year-old's hand and they're just like, you know, they don't really care what kind of sound they right. make. They're just having right. fun.
Yeah.
A high schooler wants it to sound good. So they're going to do what you tell them to do to make it sound good most of mm-hmm. the time.
Right.
Different kind of mentality.
Yeah, a little bit. And then life took you where you transitioned to an opportunity with a middle school. What was that change like for you?
Whew, that was a rough year. So in our district, they opened a new high school. And we had some plans where I was going to be teaching orchestra at both schools. And then those plans did not happen. And there's a ugly story about all of that that I'll leave out, but it also was COVID. And so the combination of all of that, I actually got my position became eliminated and I got a letter in the mail as a big, huge surprise that I was being forced transferred to an elementary school. And I've never taught elementary music, but I had tenure in the district, so they couldn't fire me, but my position at Mount Juliet High School, there just wasn't enough students because 60% of our orchestra students were going to the new high school and wow. choir students and all of that. So our enrollment was going to go down, which means teachers, you know, if you don't have 2,200 students anymore, you've gone down to 1,400. That's a whole bunch of teachers that aren't going to be there anymore.
Yeah.
And my principal was even surprised. This was a district level decision. So, I spent that summer trying to figure out what the heck I was going to do. I applied to other positions in different districts. I applied to positions within our district that I was not interviewed for. I mean, I could do choir, orchestra, or band pretty much anywhere. I had never done elementary. And I was like, this is going to be a disservice to these elementary school kids because I don't know what the heck I'm doing with this, you know? Mm. There's a special place in my heart for elementary school music teachers. They do so much with such squirrely little dudes. And I was not that person, you know?
Right.
So I did try to look into that. I did a lot of research and I there's a great curriculum developed that I was going to, you know, anyway, I tried really hard. I even went into the elementary school and cleaned out the closet and got things ready for COVID teaching. Cause that was the other thing is how do you teach elementary music when they can't touch the same things? They can't sing. They have to all be wearing masks. Like I was like, I don't know what the heck to do. So about 2 weeks before school starts, I got a text message. Actually, I got a phone call from a friend who said, this particular person that was retiring surprisingly, and she was going to send her email the email was going to the principal the next day. And I should also send an email saying I was interested. And it was at Ellis Middle School, about 45 minute drive from my house, teaching choir and orchestra. And I was like, I'm in, let's go. So I had an interview at 1 o'clock, and by 1:15, the job was mine, which was great. My other school district let me out of my contract so that I could go. And, you know, I started school 2 weeks later at a totally different school, totally different district. And it was great. It was, you know, I really feel like it was a blessing and one that I didn't expect, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
I thought I wouldn't go back to middle school. And so I was there for 2 years and it worked out really well. Had wonderful support from the administration and loved the band director I worked with, the theater teacher I worked with. The previous teacher that had retired was still involved and she was always at hand whenever I needed her if there was a question. COVID was weird because we had like kids every other day. So my classes were really small, but that enabled me to give a little bit more individual attention. You know, so there were challenges overall, but I really felt like I landed where I needed to land. And then Mount Juliet reopened 2 years later. The other assistant band director that was there took a high school job that was opening and took a full-time, like he'd be the head director. And so I slid right back into kind of that position. Did not have orchestra the first year back at Mount Juliet, but I did this past year in the fall and was able to get another like 30 students in the group. Good. But you know, it's changed a lot. So yeah. that's been another kind of frustrating thing for me.
Sure.
So anyway, sorry, I kind of went off to the next thing.
Yeah, no, that's good. So, I mean, what was it like? I mean, you had such an influence at Mount Juliet High School and you're back and it's familiar. And then you kicked off the orchestra again. I mean, was it like, yes, I'm home? Or was it just like kind of an odd feeling to walk through those halls again?
I would say a little bit of both. I never really left Mount Juliet. So even though I was at Ellis Middle School, I was still after school going back to Mount Juliet and doing all of the band stuff. I was still considered in the band director's mind, one of the assistant band directors. I was still doing all of the marching band stuff and winter. They do winter groups as well. So I was doing winter winds with him as well. So I was still basically working there, but just after school hours. So in some ways I felt like I hadn't ever left. I just had left during the day for a couple of years and then right. I went back.
Yeah.
Moving back into the office that I had for so long was kind of surreal, you know? But it definitely felt like home and yeah, I was glad to be back. The difference is things had really changed. Just in general, the demographics of the school, with the new opening of the other high school, we still had a lot less students. And so trying to rebuild, quote unquote, rebuild the programs, choir numbers were still, you know, not as big as they used to be. So that was just weird. So I taught general music, I taught piano, and I'd never taught piano before. And so Sandy Elliott, the choir director, had really helped me go through and figure out how to teach the piano classes. And now I love teaching piano. That's been a real blessing also, is having that skill set that I thought I would never be able to do because I'm a horrible piano player. but I'm not a very good cello player either, but I can teach you how to play it, you know, yeah. That kind of thing. So I approached it that way, where I'm not here to always have to demonstrate how to do it. I'm here to encourage and keep working with them so they can learn how to do it.
Yeah.
And so that's been super fun to watch these kids that have never played an instrument before and have always wanted to play piano, learn how to read music, learn how to read rhythms, learn how to play even basic things with two hands. The first time they play with two hands, it's like, you know?
Yeah.
That was really cool. So coming back to Mount Juliet, I did a team taught band with Mr. Cox, and then I taught class piano as well. And then I had like a general music class. And then this past year I had orchestra and piano as well as band.
Oh my gosh. Very full schedule.
Yeah, but like you get into a routine, and I'm such a planner that I kind of have all my curriculum, you know, laid out and all of that. So it was good. It was a good year.
You'd have to be very highly organized to keep that falling into place.
That is something that I am. Yes.
And
very highly organized.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yes. That's a task and a skill that not everybody carries.
Right.
So what was the inspiration to develop the Cedar Creek Community Band?
Oh, sure. Gosh. It's been 15 years now. Can't believe that in some ways. I know. So when we moved here from California, when I was in California, I played in a community band and I loved it. It was just a great outlet for me personally, you know, because I'm teaching all day and then I have my own children and I'm like, I need something for me. And so I would go and play once a week rehearsal, maybe twice a week rehearsal. I think it was once a week rehearsal for a few hours. And then we'd have a concert every, you know, 8 weeks or whatever. And I loved it. So when I moved here, I was like, oh, I want to, you know, get connected. I joined a mother of the preschoolers group so I could make some friends because I knew nobody here in Tennessee. I'm like, I'm moving to to me, it was the middle of nowhere, you know? Right. And so made a lot of friends there. But then I started looking for a community band. And I found one in a band that was actually rehearsing at Vanderbilt. And so I would drive into Vanderbilt and do that. And it was fine, but I didn't love the drive into Nashville. Right. And then I was pregnant with my daughter. And I was like, you know, I'm not going to want to do this with a newborn at home. And it's too far and whatever. So anyway, my mom actually said, well, why don't you start one in your area? And I was like, how do you start a community band? Like, that's not something you do, you know? So I saw in the newspaper, there was a local jazz band and there was a local at like Wilson County Arts Guild and all kind of sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce. So after I had my daughter, I kind of looked into it more and met some more people, and working with Mount Juliet High School, I was able to meet some more people and kind of talk to people about it. And I found there was really a need. And Tony was willing to let me use the high school building and the equipment and all of that. I got Wilson County permission. Wow. to go in and do it. And I handed out flyers and put it in the newspaper and set it out in social media and all of that. And that first rehearsal, we had like 45 people show up.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. I guess people want to do this, you know? Yeah. And it's been going strong. So that was January of 2007. No, I'm sorry. January of 2009. Whew. And yeah, so my daughter was a year and a half old. No, a little over two. That's right. Yeah. She was a little over two. And so my husband would watch the kids and I would go do community band. And wow. I had a couple people that have helped me over the years. And then Ben Chanel from Lebanon High School has been the associate conductor probably the last, gosh, close to 10 years now. And that's been great. So now we rehearse at Lebanon High School. And yeah, it's we have anywhere from 35 to 75 people in the group each season.
Oh, my gosh. It was great.
And when we had to shut down for COVID, it was, we tried to do virtual. I mean, people really still wanted to play. They were emailing me all the time. What do you think about this? Well, what if we try to do that? Like they were trying yeah. everything to get back together. So it's definitely, you know, important. I did take a year off. Last year I sang with the Nashville Symphony Chorus and they meet at the same time on Monday nights. And so I had some people, I took a sabbatical, whatever that means, so that I could go, you know, sing because I really, really wanted to sing. They were doing Mozart's Requiem, which was like a bucket list thing for me.
Yeah.
And so I had some people step in and conduct and all of that, which worked out really, really well. But I also knew that like being somebody that's been part of a community band and when you get used to having the same conductor, the same people leading, when you have a whole bunch of other random people, it gets a little bit chaotic and a little bit different to where people were like, okay, are you coming back? Or are you not coming back? Cause we're going to decide whether we're coming back if you're coming back, you know?
Right.
So yeah. Like no pressure. So this past year I came back and we had a great season. And you know, I plan to be there again next year. I kind of been taking it one year at a time. At this point in my life, I kind of feel like I would love to have some younger person who's organized and on fire and would love to take it over, or a retired person, you know, conductor yeah. that would like to do it and that be their passion. But for now I'll stick with it.
And what a blessing to the community. You're not only giving these people an outlet to be able to have a space to play, connect with other musicians, but you're bringing these opportunities for the community to enjoy orchestrated music. Like what an incredible blessing you've done for that area.
Well, thank you. It's fun. Yeah. We have a good time. So
that's amazing. Yeah. And you're a very well honored instructor. When I was researching your background, 2018, you're one of the 50 directors who make a difference. One of 30 CMA Foundation's 2019 Music Teachers of Excellence, a semi-finalist for the 2020 Grammy Music Educator. I'm sure I'm missing many more. I mean, what does it feel like to have?
Also a CMA Music Teacher of Excellence in 2023. So 19 okay. and 23, I've gotten the award twice now, which has been amazing.
Yes. I mean, what does it feel like to have these acknowledgments towards your hard work as a music instructor?
Well, I think a lot of times music teachers feel overlooked or not as important as other teachers that are core subject teachers. And yet these kinds of opportunities or these types of organizations that put forth music teachers like this are really important to not just validate, but just to make you feel seen. And the Country Music Association Foundation in particular has done so much for music education over the last 10 years or so of all the initiatives that they've done, all the grants and things like that. So I'm actually getting a chance to speak at a conference next weekend on behalf of the Music Teachers of Excellence and what they do and encourage people to apply, because they only get about 200 applications every year, where if you think about the thousands of music educators in the United States, there should be thousands of applications, you know, because there are wonderful people. I definitely think that it's one of those things when there's 30 educators that usually that win this award each year, and you kind of come into a club, if you would, or, you know, you have this collaboration. They bring us together. They do professional development. They celebrate you. There's a grant for both you and your school. Like, there's just some wonderful things. But I think we all feel like there are so many other people in our profession that also deserve it, but they don't want to jump through the hoops or do the work for the grant. So a lot of it is, like you were saying, being organized and being able to just apply. The Grammy one was a basic nomination where there's, you know, it was great to be a quarter finalist, like 200 and something people. And then a semifinalist was really big to me. There was 25 of us at the time, wow, the whole nation. And to me, that was really, really big because there were so many hoops to jump through for that organization. Yeah. Like, you had to do, so, I mean, probably 15, 20 hours worth of recordings and interviews of students and letters of recommendation and answering questions and all of that. So a lot of these awards aren't just because you're a great educator, but it's because you're willing to put forth the time to have the recognition. And I think that's important because I want our names in Middle Tennessee to be out there. We have some amazing educators, music educators in Middle Tennessee. And I think a lot of times people think of, you know, Florida, Ohio, Texas as like the main music areas in the States, but there's great music education going on everywhere, you know, in the middle of nowhere state, XYZ.
Yeah.
That music educator is just as influential to their 45, 50 students as someone in Texas who has, you know, 500 students. So I think that's the main point of those awards is you should be celebrated and recognized regardless of where you are. You are making a difference to these individual students.
Yeah, absolutely. And you never know where those students may go. Like, when you look at cities like LA, Atlanta, Nashville, Minneapolis, New York, where they have a heavy music scene, those people who are making it in the industry are not from there. They had a music teacher somewhere wherever they grew up that helped them realize, I want to do this.
Yes. And that's what CMA focuses on a lot about that. Like, it starts with me with music education, ME music education, which is cool. And so they've had their country music artists actually do a lot of stuff on social media where they're interviewing them and talking about how music education in their early life shaped their professional lives and how it influenced them to become the stars that they are today. And, you know, how their music teachers were so instrumental in involving them in some way or inspiring them in some way in this craft to continue on and do that. And I think that's the main thing is I'm all about trying to just create consumers of music, trying to educate people in the overall musicality of things, not just what buttons to push down or where to put your fingers or how to hold a bow, but like actual music history and theory and the basics. I have people tell me all the time, I can't read music. It's like, well, do you have a piece of paper and a pen? I can teach you to read music in about 30 seconds. You know, it's not as hard as you think. Right. So, you know, I want people to have more respect for musicians as well. You know, I've met many people that are professional musicians in rock bands that tour the world. They cannot read music. They just play by ear and they know the chords and they're professionals. mm-hmm. all the way to opera singers who are professional, you know, opera singers traveling the world, doing all these amazing things, and obviously do read music, classically trained musicians. So I think a musician, quote unquote, whatever that means, just means you're creating music, involved with music, anything. But I think we need to get away from the stigma of if you're not out there making albums and millions of dollars, then you're not a real musician. Like, that's not true. Right. I mean, I sit down with all these, you know, people every Monday night, and I see all these wonderful musicians ages 15 to 90 that are still making music. Mm-hmm. And that's what's important to me, is just, you know, having that outlet and being able to be involved in music in some way or another.
Yeah. Cause like in Nashville, you have the Nashville number system, and those are, you know, you can see it at the Ryman when they're changing chords and changing different things, but you also have your session right. players. You never see a set. Well, not never, but a lot of your session players, and they're not just in Nashville, they're in Atlanta, New York, LA, they're in all over the world.
Right.
Like, you don't see them, but they're making a career out of it. And some people just, yep. they want to be in a community band. Like, they like having their marketing job. They like having their 9-to-5. They don't want the stress. They want to, and that's the gift of music. You can play it your entire yep. life. And when I got to exactly. see a tuba that's Christmas.
People, I'm like, yes, tuba Christmas is so fun. I love when people say, well, I haven't played in a really long time. Like, well, get your instrument fixed up and come on in and try yeah. it. Mm-hmm. And then after that first rehearsal, they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how much I missed it. It's like, yeah, well, if you were a football player in high school, you're probably not still going to be a football player when you're 70. But if you were a trumpet player in high school, you might still play trumpet when you're 70. That's definitely mm-hmm. doable, you know? Yeah. So that's kind of, you know, I think my big picture music educator philosophy is to just create people who love music and give them exposure to it.
Yes.
You know, having the orchestra program at Mount Juliet really showed me how one thing in your life can change the entire trajectory of your life. I mean, I had a student that had never picked up the cello before, and he played in his freshman year and now is playing professionally. So that's it's
amazing.
Like, if the orchestra wasn't there at Mount Juliet High School at that time for him to try that, where would he be now? Mm-hmm. What else? It would be a completely different life, you know? Yeah. So that's why I want opportunities for students. That's why I fight for music education. And people will say, oh, well, you know, you can't have class sizes and numbers and all of that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, but every student's important. And think about not just the students that are being fed right now, but the students that hopefully in 10, 15 years are getting fed within these programs. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of cuts lately and a lot of things going on where the numbers are lower, and so the positions are just eliminated. And now that's all those students that aren't going to have that possibility of it changing their lives.
Right.
So that's another one of my soapbox things.
Yeah. No, don't be. I'm right there with you. I believe that music is more than just music, because you're learning math, you're learning language, and you're building, you're giving a social outlet, you're building community, you're building friends. I mean, you said yourself, you stayed friends with your band instructor. Like, I have friends who are like, I'm still friends with my band instructor. Like, they're graduated college, they have families, they're like, I'm going to go have coffee with my band instructor. Like, you don't have yeah. that with your math teacher. You don't have that with your science yeah. teacher. You see them in a store, you're like, oh my God, that's my teacher. But with a band right. and music instructor, there is this connection, because it's, you have this common interest, this common passion of music, and it's for taking sure. you through the steps of life, and you carry that through. Like, you can be driving down the road and a song will come on and you'll be like, oh my gosh, I played that in band.
Yep. Yeah. And I have a couple of kids that even back in California, so now we've been here almost 19 years, and I have a few students I still keep in contact with. One is a staff writer for the Army now as a composer.
Wow.
And she's amazing. One is a violist and has played with Beyonce, plays on film scores. She's been on the Grammys. She's been on the Emmys. She's been on the Tonys. Like, she's played all throughout the throughout the world. She toured with Willie Nelson, like all these crazy things, playing viola. And then I have a student who went to college for a little while, wasn't really for him, did another job for a long time, and now he's back playing clarinet. He's an amazing clarinet player in middle school. And now he's going back and getting his degree, and he really wants to teach music. And, going back and being able, I go back and visit my family all the time, and going back and being able to be part of his life, watching his clarinet recital on YouTube live kind of thing. Yeah. And just being able to support him now, even almost 20 years after I taught him, it's really, really super cool to have that connection long-term with these people, they're not just students, they're people. Mm-hmm. And so yes, I definitely feel like it's a different kind of a thing. And that's one of the reasons I love it so much, is that personal relationship that you build with, I call them my specials, like kids that you know are going to probably be part of your life, or you're going to be part of their life for a long period of time. And you want mm-hmm. to be, you want to keep in contact with them. I've been to weddings of former students, some of them that have met in my classroom, things like that, where it's just so neat to be part of their big picture life, as opposed to just one class period, 1 year. You have them sometimes all 4 years of high school, mm-hmm. you become a part of their life. And especially when you talk about marching band, when you're there an extra 20 hours a week or so, lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's the gift of music. Like with sports, you're going to age out. You're either going to get too old for that potential injury, or going to get an injury. Like, it's just part of that nature. But like you were saying, right. you can be 70 and playing music. Like, it's such a gift.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
And so what do you feel like it takes to stand out as a music instructor?
Oh, gosh. Passion for what you do, connecting with the students. I think actual teaching stuff is, being organized and consistent, having a good plan, knowing I see this a lot with younger teachers, but knowing those boundaries between being their teacher and being their quote unquote friend. It's really easy with high school students to think, oh, these are almost adults. Well, they're still kids,
right.
And now that my youngest is going to be a senior, so I've been through a lot of teenage actual parenting, knowing, how their brain still isn't developed and all those kinds of things. But I think to be successful, you also need to utilize your resources, reach out to others. Don't think you know it all. I've had some student teachers that have come in and been like, oh, this is going to work. And it's like, I don't know about that. Well, I'm just going to keep teaching it until they get it. It's like, well, sometimes the things you think are going to work don't work. And you got to figure out why and how to adjust, you know, and then reach out to others. Hey, I tried this and it didn't work. What has worked for you in this situation? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't want to admit that they're not the best all the time, or they don't know it all. It's like, no, you don't know it all. Like, none of us do. What's why we need each other. So I've had a great opportunity over the past, 15 years to work with other music educators in my own building. And that's been awesome. I learned just as much from them as they do from me. And we collaborate and work together. I've tried to be involved with the Middle Tennessee Band and Orchestra Association. I go to all the conferences. I go to the Midwest Conference. I mean, you learn from others, so never stop learning as an educator and adapting, because every year is different. You have different kids, you have different situations, different instrumentation, all of that, but mm-hmm. you have to be adaptable, to each situation.
Yeah.
So, and then just, I think there's a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of noise that goes on behind you with a lot of stuff. Try to focus on the good every day. Try to focus on what you're really there to do. And don't let all of that other junk that's happening in the world, in the district, in the school, hinder what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
That's a tough one sometimes too.
Right.
So, yeah.
And when it comes to conducting, is there a particular skill or craft to conducting a group of musicians?
Oh, that's a tricky question. I think everybody is unique. I mean, I've worked under tons and tons of different conductors and found something interesting in each one of them and different. I don't think there's one formula. I mean, I think you need to know your music, know the score, know what you're doing, know the parts, you know, and I think being able to almost troubleshoot beforehand, I mean, it's kind of like a really good mechanic when you start to describe to them what kind of car your car's making this sound and it sounds like XYZ and they go, oh, it's probably this or that. It's the same thing with, I think, teaching and conducting is the group's probably going to have a hard time here and here and here. So kind of knowing ahead of time your plan to address those issues or possible issues. You know, I think the more you do it, the more those things come up and you realize, oh, this group's having the same problem as that other group that I did had, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not quite sure there's a direct formula of any kind with that. A lot of it is experience you learn by doing. And a lot of it is you learn by making lots of mistakes. And Community Band was one of those things where I was like, oh my gosh, there's all these adults in front of me. These aren't kids. You know what I mean? Like these people, yeah. Some of them have music degrees and they're way older than me. And they've been doing music a lot longer than me. And you're so intimidated. But if you can go up there and even say, hey, I'm not quite sure on that one. What do you guys think? You know, again, yeah, making it so it's not always about you. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I'm not sure I answered your question, but
no, you did, because it makes sense to be willing to bring a humbleness to the stand instead of this arrogance of I know everything, that's going to be fine, and being honest and vulnerable and humble and willing to get the feedback from these players who are before you. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, and the best conductors that I've played under have been people that have talked less and played more, been able to address certain situations or certain issues quickly, and then let us fix them. The worst have been ones that do, you know, essays on this music or on the podium about, oh, when I was a kid, blah, blah. It's like, I don't care. Can we just play? You know? So, It's knowing your audience too. You know, if you're working, I've seen some amazing conductors work with our middle school and high school honor bands, and the way that they address the kids and the fun activities that they do. Angela Ammerman came down and worked with our mid-state orchestra and all-state orchestras, and her energy is always up. It matches what the kids, you know, need. And she gave them lots of little breaks and little games and little things for our middle schoolers. And then when she worked with the high schoolers, it was a little more serious. And so you kind of adjust to the group that you're conducting as well, but make it fun for the performers too. You don't want to just drudge through and let's play note by note. You know, there's definitely things that are good and things that are not so good with it. So,
and music is meant to be fun.
Exactly. Exactly. For sure.
Like, go be bored in math class.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Sure. So when you're working with your different students and you're teaching them like breath control, is there like exercises or something that you encourage them to do to increase their ability to have a good, solid control of their breath?
Yeah, both choir and band, I think, are very similar in that. I've been very inspired by the Breathing Gym, which there are two tuba players that developed this, Patrick Sheridan and Sam Palafflin. And it's been about 20-ish years that they did this, about 20 years ago. They developed it and did like a whole series, a DVD series and all that. And I think they've inspired a lot of what we as band directors in particular do. But also I've been able to apply that to choir completely with the breath control. So there's different exercises we'll do depending. In choir, it's a little bit, you know, more about the longevity of your breath support, being able to phrase longer and use your voice. And then in band, obviously every instrument's a little different. You know, playing flute is going to be no resistance at all. You're going to run out of air faster than playing oboe, which is probably the most resistance, or French horn, where you have a tiny little mouthpiece. So utilizing no instrument and using your breath control there. I mean, there's breathing exercises that we do with marching band and concert band every single day. And then choir exercises, warm-ups that we do for breath control, as well as individual breathing exercises. So it just kind of depends, but yeah, for sure.
Wow. And so what inspires you in life and in music?
Oh gosh. The students inspire me, to be completely honest. Watching them perform, watching them grow, seeing the you know, first time we play through a piece to the actual performance of it, and the growth in between, the days where there's little light bulbs going on, whether it be playing or history or theory or whatever, all of a sudden my piano kid being able to play both hands at the same time without, you know, pausing in between, you know, oh, hey, you kept it steady that time. Little things like that. I mean, that's really why I do what I do. And, you know, my own kids are musicians as well. And my youngest, who will be a senior, is going to go into the playing flute professionally, is what her goal is.
Wow.
And just seeing how much time she puts in, she's way better musician than I ever have been. And or ever will be. And so it's amazing where, how much time do we have? 30 minutes. Okay, great. I'm going to go practice. You know, like that's what she wants to do with her downtime. Mm-hmm. And so being able to see that there are teenagers out there, that this is their lifeline, that these are the things they love. But that's probably, I think, what inspires me is just the students and watching their growth every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty exciting. And you also had an exciting and quite the opportunity that came to you last November, because you performed in the Macy's Day Parade, but you didn't go alone. Yeah. You took somebody with you.
Well, actually, what was really cool is my daughter got to march with the Macy's Great American Band. And then the band director at Mount Juliet got to march with the same group that I marched with, the Saluting America's wow. Band Directors Band. So the three of us went from Mount Juliet, which was really, really neat. Great experience. I did the Rose Parade back in 2019 and 2021. Thank you. Sorry. It was going to be 19 into 20 and then 20. Yeah. Anyway, that's not correct. I had to think about it for a minute. So it was 22. Is that right? 2022? Yeah. Oh my goodness. All the dates are all mixed up. But the same group marched in the Rose Parade. Yeah, because it was after COVID, so it had to have been 22 because they didn't have the Rose Parade in 2021. So it was January of 2022. Wow. And that was so much fun. The Rose Parade was really long, and the Macy's Day Parade was really early. Well, they were both really early. But really, it was really neat experience. My daughter had really fun time, you know, I don't think she would do it again necessarily, just because she's kind of like, okay, I did that and that's done.
Right.
I would totally do it again with that same group, because it was really, really fun.
So what's it like to prepare for such a huge parade? I mean, this is largely a large televised event.
Yeah, so we got the music ahead of time. We practiced. I had to have things memorized, which was tough for me because I'm not a great memorizer. And then we got together, we practiced super, you know, early in the mornings, multiple times at like a athletic field kind of area in New Jersey. So everybody flew in and met at this one really big hotel in New York. We did different rehearsals inside, and then we went to different places and practiced actually parade marching. And then there was some, you know, the whole choreography of where Herald Square is. That whole thing was a little bit tricky to practice too. And so it was a lot of rehearsal, but it was all smushed into like 3 days.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we did the, like 3 days of rehearsal and then the actual parade. So I think we went out Sunday and then the parade was that Thursday morning. So we did Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday rehearsals, and then Thursday was the actual deal. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it was great. But you know, you're thinking we're all band directors in the group, so everybody should be able to do these things. And yet a lot of people, you know, haven't marched in forever, or maybe even right. didn't march in high school, you know, who knows. But it was so much fun, because it was kind of like going back to your high school or college days where everybody's together, you know, mm-hmm. everybody has common goals, and it's just, it was really, really fun.
Yeah.
So, it was great to do it with Tony Cox too. It was great to see him, because he hadn't done anything like that, you know, so watching him and all his focusedness on playing the cymbals, and, you know, it was really fun to see him that way too.
Yeah. And so how early are you getting up, and like, what's the day like when you're participating in a parade of this caliber?
Well, that particular day we went to bed early Wednesday night. We got up about 2 a.m. on Thursday morning. Gosh. We had to be, wow. I think might have even been earlier than that. Cause I think we had to be at Herald Square and do our run through at 2:30 or 3 a.m. And then you go somewhere and you eat breakfast, and then you go to the parade lineup area and kind of wait for about an hour-ish before everything starts. But everybody has to be lined up ahead of time.
Right.
So yeah, it was, you know, it was a lot of hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait, get on a bus, go sit in traffic, go over here, you know. but yeah, the parade itself wasn't very long, but oh my goodness, there were so many people. I just couldn't, the Rose Parade, there were a lot of people on the sidelines. The Macy's Day Parade was ridiculous, like 40 people deep over here, people up Whoa. In high-rise buildings watching from above. I mean, it was pretty intense. It was a shorter parade, but a lot more people.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just have to ask, how bad do your feet hurt after 3 days of rehearsal and then walking in this parade?
It's fine. I do a lot of physical activity and I'm on my feet a lot. So it was fine. That was
okay. Cool. I've always wondered that when I watch them go through, I'm like, how bad are their feet hurting at the end of this?
You know, and you get used to we were able to wear like our own black shoes. So everybody kind of had their own tennis shoes. We didn't have to wear those super uncomfortable marching shoes or whatever. So we were able to, you know, I wore good tennis shoes with my insoles in there. So it was fine.
if there's someone or a student or maybe even an adult who wants to get started in music, what advice would you give them?
Do you mean like playing new or being a music educator, or what do you mean?
Playing new, like let's say they're just wanting to get started, and maybe they played in elementary school or middle school and then they quit because practice is hard. Or maybe it's an adult who saying, I've always wanted to fill in the blank, play instrument. Like, where would they get started?
Private lessons. Private lessons is the main thing to go. If there's always a music store in your area that can give you people that could do lessons. Or sometimes there's actual music schools, for that as well. That's the main thing is, you know, if you didn't grow up playing or you haven't played in a long time and you want to relearn, kind of, I would definitely do private lessons for your instrument.
Nice. And if there's someone who wants to pursue being a music teacher, what would you share with them?
Well, I mean, they have to go to college. So you actually have to get a degree in it. There are ways that you can get around that if you have a degree in something else, and then you can take what's called the praxis exam. And, then, you know, but I highly recommend student teaching. If you are somebody who may be interested in that, and maybe you're, you know, out in the professional world that doesn't have to do with education, I would substitute and see if it's really what you would like to do. A lot of music teachers will say, hey, we would love you to just be our music sub, you know, and if you can be the music sub for that district or whatever, it's great to be able to have, we have some retired people or some students that ended up getting their education degree but didn't necessarily go straight into teaching that have subbed for us, which is really nice. Yeah, I mean, find a good school near you that has a good music education program and join it.
Yeah.
So.
So what's next for you?
So I have accepted a position at a high school in Bellevue, Tennessee, part of the Metro Nashville public school system. And it is an orchestra position where I'll be teaching two classes of orchestra. And then we're starting a class piano lab as well. Wow. So I'll be doing at least two classes of piano. So I may be team teaching a section of band, but I won't be doing all the after school stuff. Part of the inspiration is the high school marching band at Mount Juliet is very competitive, and that's why they're so good. They put 20 to 30 hours a week extra time in, and I'm going to be a grandma in August.
Oh my gosh, really congratulations.
Thank you. I wanted some extra time and not always to be at band, which, you know, the last 18 years, I've pretty much had to say no to a ton of things because of the band calendar and the band schedule.
Yeah.
So I also really wanted to grow an orchestra program a little bit more. And I don't see that happening at Mount Juliet the way that I really wanted to kind of revitalize it. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen. So I you know, was a little bit frustrated with that and wanted somewhere. And James Lawson High School came to me. Their choir and orchestra director had come to me when I was at Ellis Middle and said, "Hey, this program's growing. Do you want to be part of it eventually?" And I was at I was teaching middle school, and I was like, "Yeah, I'd love to get back to high school."
Yeah,
that was before I went back to Mount Juliet. But it still was like, you know, this may be a great opportunity and a great time to go try something different, something new. At a different school and district, and be able to have more time, work from 7 to 2 and not mm-hmm. from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., you right. know, which yeah. is kind of what I felt like I was doing with Mount Juliet. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a little bit more money overall too. And so all of it together, it hopefully will be a good change for the family, where I can be a Mimi. That's going to be my grandma name, Mimi.
I love it. So if someone wanted to find out more about the community band and groups and different things about what you're doing, where could they look for that information?
Sure. So the Cedar Creek Community Band has a website. They can go there, and my email address is on there. We have both Instagram and Facebook social media, so they can send me a message through that as well. If they're interested in playing, we rehearse usually Labor Day to Memorial Day. So September through end of May, and take the summer and the first month of school off just to kind of give us a month to kind of figure out what life looks like in August, you know?
Yeah.
And we usually perform 4 times a year, usually a fall concert, a December concert, and at least 1 spring concert, if not 2, kind of divided up, maybe one in March and another one in May. So, and we do some different things in the community, but it's a really fun group. So yeah, they can contact me through that.
Excellent. I'll get that posted in the show notes. I know you're super busy, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you so very much for being here and just sharing your inspiration, and everything that you've done to inspire others is just such a blessing.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for your kind words. I appreciate it, and I'm honored that you asked me to be part of this podcast. That's really, really sweet of you.
Yeah, I've wanted to ask you for a while because I've seen what you've done with students, and I've watched how you've inspired them. It's like, we've got to get this amazing woman on here.
Oh, thank you. You're very sweet.
That's it for today's episode. Sherry is so wonderful, and I am thankful for her time she took during her very busy schedule. I hope if you are someone with an interest in music or teaching, I hope she gives you an insight of what is possible for your career. On our next episode, we talk with Kelly Brown. She's a photographer who not only loves bringing out the best of her clients, but she also takes steps into the most difficult moments in people's lives with bereavement photography.
But I do think it's very cool, like the chemistry of making the medicine and how it responds to what it does in your body and all that stuff. I think that kind of stuff is very interesting. I feel like I said, I could go to school for everything if it was free.
Right. Yeah.
All of the things.
Right.
I think learning is really fun.
Thank you for joining me for this episode. I want to thank those who have been loyal listeners throughout this journey. If there's a guest you'd like me to consider for an episode, please send me a DM on Facebook or Instagram. You can find me at Journey to the Rise. And before we go, please remember to be kind to you. When you're kind to yourself, it is easier to be kind to others.